This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Kissler's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com, or through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Coming up, just because Alabama lost doesn't mean you should be dancing on the grave this week. Plus, is patience already wearing thin with Sam Darnold and the Panthers? And last night's comeback win for the Ravens, what it means for the AFC. Get to all that and more here over the next hour. By the way, it's snowing right now in Arizona. It is October 12th, snowing in Arizona. I did not know it snowed in Arizona, but I just saw a video online. It's snowing today in Arizona, October 12th already. As somebody who grew up having to worry about snow. That is way too soon, October 12th, having to deal with snow. And in Arizona, I had no idea. I don't know. I've told the story before. I've always thought if it snows, it can't really be considered like the South. And I know it's snowed here in South Carolina, but I remember the first time I went to Nashville. And I've told the story before, but I thought I was going to Nashville for work, and I thought, Tennessee, right? Oh, I don't need to bring a jacket. It was during the winter time. I thought, no problem there. It's the South. It's warm. What do I need a jacket for? And we got there, and it snowed while we were in Nashville. And I thought, it snows here? I thought this was the South. So I've said, you can't call yourself South if it snows. Nope, too bad. That's not the South. The South has to be warm enough where it doesn't snow, ever. It was snowing in Nashville, and it was cold, and I didn't bring a jacket, and I was the only one freezing there, walking outside in short sleeves while it was snowing out. And from then on, I've learned, always check the weather before you go somewhere. Don't just assume. Oh, Nashville, oh, yeah, it'll be warm. They're the South. I don't need to bring a jacket. No, how about you look at the weather first and then plan accordingly? Snowing in Arizona. Didn't know that was a thing. So hopefully that's not a sign of things to come here this winter throughout the country or the South or anywhere. Hey, as mentioned, if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Last night was a wild night in sport. It's been a wild, long weekend, if you will. With the football we had this weekend, Saturday was an incredible day of college football, followed up by an incredible day of the NFL on Sunday. You had the a great fight Saturday night for boxing. You've had the baseball playoffs go on with a couple of walk-offs, a walk-off win Sunday for the Red Sox, last night for the Red Sox to advance. The Braves get a win. How about the Dodgers-Giants, where the Dodgers looked like they were going to have a tying home run, and the wind knocked it down there on the bay, and the Giants get a big 1-0 shutout victory. It's been a great couple. That's why October, I always said October is the best month of the year. Not just for sports, but in general. Because of Halloween. Because of the scary movies, the candy, the trick-or-treating, Halloween. I love this time. The weather starts to turn slightly. It's not cold. It's not too cold, but you know, it starts to get a little cooler. And then from a sports perspective, because everything's going on. Basketball's back. The NHL's back. We're in the middle of football. We're going to have a World Series champ soon in baseball. You got everything going on. It's fantastic. Now, last night was a crazy night because not only did you have playoff baseball, but you had a wild Monday night football game, and you also had the news come down during all that about John Gruden stepping away and resigning. Let's first focus on the game itself. The Ravens get a big win. Lamar Jackson pulls off a great comeback, something I did not think he had in him. And the Ravens are down 19 with 18 minutes to go, come back and win. They force overtime, and Lamar delivers the game-winning touchdown. Lamar Jackson had only 6 incompletions and 4 touchdowns, had over 400 yards, had almost their entire offense of production. He accounted for almost every single yard of offense last night for the Ravens. Quarterback rating of 140. He was excellent. And I never thought that was something that Lamar would be able to pull off. Was it against a great team or defense? No, but still, besides the point, you have to at least see it. You have to see that capability in Lamar Jackson, and he showcased it really for the first time last night, winning with his arm, leading a comeback, because the big knock had always been, and has never won a game when trailing by two scores in the second half. Had only won once when trailing at halftime, even. Abe was much better with a lead. He's a certain type of quarterback, or they run a certain type of offense that really has to play with a lead until last night. And while it'd be too much to ask for 19-point comebacks from Lamar every week, at least you know he can lead you back. If you have to go to a pass-heavy offense and make up a deficit, after what you saw last night, you should have some faith that you can do that. Because go back, remember, he was getting booed. And I know it's his rookie season. He's won an MVP since then, but he was getting booed in a playoff game at home against the Chargers because he couldn't throw the ball. They fell behind. They couldn't do anything. They're still running it. But after we saw last night, right, the maturation of that quarterback, where last night threw it over 40 times, completed over 85%, had over 400 yards, the best performance we've seen from Lamar Jackson, and probably the most important because he showed that other side of his game now. And it was the most efficient performance of a quarterback with that many passing attempts. First time in over 4,000 quarterbacks to throw over 40 passes. I should say 4,000 games because some of them are the same quarterbacks. Over 4,000 games in which a quarterback threw over 40 passes. Lamar became the first to complete higher than 85% of them. And so the Ravens win that game last night. They moved to 4-1, and I watched and I thought, yep, you know what? This does keep them ahead of the Chiefs. The Chiefs lost Sunday Night Football. They're the defending AFC champions. Right now, I don't think you can put them higher than fifth in the AFC, in their own conference. Forget the NFL. What about the conference itself? Fifth best. The Ravens are ahead of them. The Bills, those two teams beat the Chiefs, as well as the Browns and the Chargers, at minimum. And as I laid out earlier, I think there are a couple of things at play for the Chiefs. Number one is when you have to start paying guys, you lose other pieces. It creates some weaknesses or holes elsewhere on the roster. Patrick Mahomes is no longer on that rookie deal. And so we saw last year, right, you take away a couple of offensive linemen, look how different that team looks. You take away a defensive player or two, you take away your number two wide receiver because you can't afford to pay them, look at how much of an impact that could potentially have. It seems minor, it seems small, but now when Mecole Hardman's your number two wide receiver, it makes things a little bit different. Now when your defense loses a pass rusher or somebody, you know, to count on, Breshad Breeland in the secondary, whoever it may be, right, the things change. And the number two thing at play is losing in the Super Bowl last year, which also sounds somewhat minor. I mean, it's a big deal to lose in the Super Bowl, but you figure, well, they were the runner-up. They'll be just fine next year. And we usually fall back on that. Teams will fall back on that. They figure, let's just run it back. It's what the Jaguars did. They made it to the AFC title game, blew a lead against the Patriots, and felt, well, this team almost got to the Super Bowl. Let's just bring everybody back. And they gave Blake Bortles a big contract. And what a mistake that was. But we have this thought process a lot of times that when something goes a certain way, you figure it'll go exactly the same way if you do the same thing. Oh, let's just do it again. We'll have better results. We'll be just as good. That's not always the case. You can't always recreate that success you had just by simply trying to do the same thing. So for the Chiefs, right, back-to-back Super Bowl appearances, you think like, they'll be in the Super Bowl next year. They'll be fine. But only three teams have ever gone to three straight Super Bowls, so that's hard to count on. It's also incredibly tough to come back from a loss specifically in the Super Bowl because the Patriots are the only team in the last 30 years to get back to the Super Bowl after losing the year prior. And look at the recent Super Bowl losers in the NFL. The Panthers got to the Super Bowl and lost. Followed up the next year by going just 6-10. Defense fell to fourth worst in the league. The Falcons have not been the same since their Super Bowl loss. The Rams with Jared Goff are not the same. It's why they went out and got Matt Stafford. After that Super Bowl, Jared Goff was 19-15 with the Rams. He went from an MVP candidate to being benched for a rookie last year and then traded away. And the 49ers, since reaching their Super Bowl, they've gone 10-14 since. It is hard when you lose that Super Bowl to come back because football is tough. It's the only sport in which practice is tougher than the games. Right, basketball, baseball. Baseball, you take some batting practice. They're throwing you meatballs. You field some grounders. No big deal. You play catch with one another, you take infield, and then you get into a game a little more difficult. You don't get those room service hops off the fungo bat. You don't get a pitcher, you know, your coach grooving it down the middle. You have actual games that count and at-bats that are meaningful and pitchers that are trying to get you out instead of allowing you to hit something. Basketball, similar idea. Yeah, maybe your coach works, so you have to do a lot of running, but, you know, you're not banging up against one another like in an actual game, and you're not going full speed. Football, even without going full speed, they've changed the rules, but you know there's still a lot of hitting. You throw the pads on, you go out there, and you run into each other, and And it's a physical sport, even when you're practicing, even when you're in shells. The only exception for a team that's been able to handle that Super Bowl loss has been the Patriots. And the Patriots have been able to do it because not only the talent, greatest quarterback, greatest coach, greatest dynasty, but also the Patriot way that we always talk about, where they're also disciplined. They never make mistakes. And Belichick has everybody in line. And, you know, you always watch the Patriots, and you never see them shoot themselves in the foot, at least not when Tom Brady was there. They're always so disciplined. They know these sneaky rules that they take advantage of and these clever plays, and it's the other team screwing up. Well, in the case of the Chiefs, Andy Reid is kind of the antithesis of that. He's kind of the opposite. Runs a little bit more of a loose ship, and it shows with the Chiefs this year leading the league in turnovers, fifth in penalties, worst defense in the league. It's a sloppy team. So when you lose last year in that Super Bowl, you have to come back and maybe be even a little bit harder. Maybe you have to work a little bit harder. Right? Have to get into line a little bit more. Have to be disciplined a little bit more. It may not be happening. It's harder to bounce back from a Super Bowl loss when you invest so much. Right? It's the pinnacle, not just in football, but all sports. That is the premier championship. It's why over 100 million people watch it every year, and we care about the Super Bowl halftime performance and who's singing the national anthem. And you get there, and you work your whole life for that point, and you have 2 weeks to prep, and you put in all the offseason work, and then you lose. And now you have to pick yourself up off the mat and come back even better the next year. It's not easy. Right? It's not like playing a video game and you lose in Grand Theft Auto and you just restart and like, okay, that's all right. Let me give it another try. You blow a sales call. Oh, okay, that's fine. I'll have another one this afternoon. Right? This was what they were working their whole lives for. They get there and they lose. It's tough to bounce back from that. And the Chiefs are struggling right now. Now, what was really interesting about last night, other than the Lamar Jackson comeback, is the fact that during all this, we get this story that breaks about John Gruden. And John Gruden, we already knew the details or the reason why he was in hot water. Last night, we get the news that he's resigning. He's stepping away. He's stepping down as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. And I don't want to spend too much time on it because I figure you could get thoughts elsewhere. Everybody is going to knock you over the head with this story throughout today and probably the coming days. Now, it's clear from Jump Street what Gruden said in the emails inappropriate. It's wrong. A lot of it was terrible. A lot of it shouldn't be said in email and spoken word and anything. I don't think anybody of a right mind will deny that. The things that he said in those emails, inappropriate, unacceptable. But there also is, and also, by the way, of course, with that being said, there should be some sort of punishment as well. I get that. But there also is this this gray area, this line you have to walk, you have to watch in that personal emails while working elsewhere a decade ago. Because I imagine if you pull emails over the past 10 years of any other coach in the NFL, I would almost guarantee, I'd be willing to bet money, you would find something for probably every coach that you could fire them as well for the past 10 years. Personal, private emails that they were sending going back as far as 10 years ago and when they were maybe even working at a different place. Does that mean what Gruden did was right? No, of course not. He should have been punished. But there is that fine line you walk about, how far back can you go? What's off base? Because, Gruden had players talk this past week, like Josh Jacobs, who said, "Oh no, I've never had any incidents. No issues with him in terms of potentially being racist or a homophobe." I mean, they have an openly gay player in that locker room, right? So the players in that locker room have backed him in recent days. But for anybody, not even just NFL coaches, a lot of people driving around listening right now, I imagine, right? You go back 10 years into your personal emails, I'm sure somebody will find something that they don't like. It's like I always talk about with social media. A guy makes an all-star game. You go back and look at his tweets from when he was 15 years, and Gruden was an adult, but in certain cases, right, like Hader, the pitcher for the Brewers, went back and found tweets from when he was like 15. I think for all of us, we all have those skeletons in our closet that at some point you probably said something you shouldn't have. Nobody is perfect. Now, does that excuse John Gruden? No, my point just being, these other coaches in the NFL, they should be a little concerned now. Where do you draw the line? Because if you go back and any of these coaches are probably thinking, if you got them in a room, if they go and talk to their wives, right, and if you look back at my emails, Roger Goodell probably not be happy either from the past 10 years. I think you could say that about a lot of people in the NFL and really a lot of people in a lot of industries. What Gruden said was not right. But he also wasn't with the Raiders. It was 10 years ago. It's a complicated thing. He should have been punished. But it's just a, it is a complex story. It's not so cut and dry that, hey, you said something, bad, it's time to go. Because I think for a lot of the people involved in the NFL, they would be in that same boat if in the same situation. Not only that, but the fact that this was an investigation into the Washington football team when they looked over, I think it was 65,000 or 650,000 emails, this is the only thing we've got from it, which seems odd. Now, Gruden did make some remarks in those emails about Roger Goodell. I don't know if this was some sort of personal vendetta from Goodell. Remember, these emails got leaked to the New York Times. Who's putting those out? Who do you think sent those emails only about Gruden to the New York Times? Not even including the responses from Bruce Allen, who was working for an NFL team at the time. Gruden was not. So I think there's also a little bit of kind of like foul play here involved. What else was going on in the rest of those emails? How come nothing came up with the Washington football team, who has been investigated now seemingly for years? And we just only got this Gruden thing out of 650,000 emails? All we got was Gruden? I think there's more here to uncover. And I think Dan Snyder, the Washington football team, right, there's levels of power. The owner is obviously more power than a coach in the NFL, even if that coach is John Gruden. I imagine more will come from this. I think more has to come from this. You tell me you have all these emails, you were investigating the Washington football team, and as of now, the only thing you found that you put out there were these emails from John Gruden. Seems a little suspicious. I think there's more to this. Or you're covering up something for the Washington football team, and you wanted Gruden to be the scapegoat for us to all turn our attention to John and not focus on the rest of this investigation. So I think it's more complex than simply Gruden said some things he shouldn't have and lost his job. I think there's more at play here. And maybe it's me being skeptical or being sinister. I think Roger Goodell, the NFL, I think there's something going on, too, behind the scenes that extends beyond John. Call it a conspiracy theory, if you will. But I think there's more going on beyond just Gruden and all this. All those emails, that's the only thing you got in there? And it says in the stories, go read the New York Times, that he was talking with Bruce Allen. Right? It insinuates that Allen was having these conversations. So what was he saying? Because he was actually working for an NFL team at the time. No, he's not in the league anymore, but he was a Washington football team employee. You're investigating the Washington football team. How come we didn't get those side of the conversations? Because if Gruden was saying those things, all right, what were the responses if that was the conversation being had? I don't know. The whole thing seems a little odd, a little funny. I think there's more. It's like an onion. The more you peel, the more it stinks. I think there's more layers to this than simply just John Gruden got caught saying some bad things. I think it runs a little bit deeper than that. I think this is a much bigger than just John Gruden, and I don't know if we'll ever get those answers. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Rob is with us. Rob, what's going on? How are you?
All right. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I completely agree with you. I think that it was leaked about the DeMaurice Smith stuff last week, specifically because of the impending vote on whether or not he was going to lose his job. The NFL and the owners, they love DeMaurice Smith because they get everything they want out of him when it comes time to negotiate a CBA. They don't want somebody in there that will actually fight for the players. I can't help but to think that that's really what's at hand. I mean, they're supposed to be negotiating a new CBA here in the next, what, a couple years, year or two, or maybe farther down the line than that. But I think John Gruden just – and you're right, 640,000 emails, and that's what they found. A lot of people, could they honestly look at themselves in the mirror and say that they've never said something that they regret or they've never done something that they regret? Nobody's perfect. You know, it just seems kind of out of left field, and, you know, wouldn't you know it, right after that, I think last Friday – Smith is keeping his job. You know, he's successful in riling up the players to want to support Smith, even though he does absolutely nothing for them. You know, they lose out on now they got to play an extra game. Essentially, anything the owners want, they get. So it's just kind of funny to me. Like I said, there's no doubt in my mind that the NFL owners and the NFL and Roger Goodell want to keep Smith as the players union head for as long as they possibly can.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to it. Appreciate the call, Rob. Whatever it may be, I think it's more than just simply going through these old emails and, oh, John said something bad, we should probably, you know, do something about it. I think there's a lot more here. I don't know if it's a personal vendetta with Goodell, but it is very sketchy that they whenever you get information, think who it benefits. Like, where is this information coming from? The NFL did this investigation. Suddenly, the emails of only John Gruden and what he said wind up with the New York Times. Who do you think sent them there? Right? This is the NFL putting this out. And when Gruden initially survived the first blow about the head of the NFLPA, then what do we get the last 48 hours? More emails about, well, it wasn't just that. He also said this, and he said this, and he said this, and then it became too much to overcome. Should Gruden have been punished? Yes, I think so. But my whole point being, it's not just cut and dry. Gruden said some bad things and had to be forced out. There's more going on here. And I don't know what it is, and I don't know if we're ever going to find out. I think there's more in those emails as well. I think as of now, the NFL's covering up something. You're investigating the Washington football team. You have 100,000s of emails. I don't think that's the only thing in there. And Gruden, for the time being, is the fall guy. I don't know if it was because in those emails he was taking personal attacks at Roger Goodell, and Goodell took that person. I have no idea. I don't know. But I'll also say that a lot of people would be in the same position as John Gruden if you went back through things they said in their own personal life over the last 10 years. And I don't know what that cutoff is, because everybody should have an opportunity to grow and improve. What Gruden said, again, was off base, it was wrong, it was inappropriate, it was incorrect, all of those things. But his own players currently kind of defended him, and they're the ones around him every day, right? Maybe he's grown, maybe he's gotten better. At what point do you give somebody that opportunity to work on themselves and improve? Or to educate themselves on a certain matter, or whatever it may be? Or you just go back to 10 years ago and you look at something in the past from the current lens and just, indict somebody without looking at the time that's gone by since then. If you understand the point I'm trying to get across. Anyways, spent more time on Gruden than I was even planning, because I know everyone else is discussing it, and I do think it's a little more complicated than how it seems on the surface, so I don't want to try to get too much into the weeds, but those are just my initial thoughts on it all. What Gruden did, said, certainly wrong. Should have been punished. But I think there's more to it here, and I also think that's a slippery slope if you want to start punishing, just say, NFL coaches to keep it in the world of the NFL. If you were to punish coaches from when they were working for a different company saying things in personal emails, if that's the case, again, if you want to go down that route, there should be a lot of nervous people in the NFL today, because I imagine many people in the NFL have things in their emails from the last decade they would not want anybody else to see either. Coming up is the patience wearing thin with Sam Darnold. Plus, we never did do our Tuesday top 10. Maybe we'll get to that coming up. And don't dance on the grave of Alabama just yet. We got plenty to do. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Look here, girls. Take this advice and remember always in life. Into each heart.
Don't dance on the grave of Alabama too soon. Get to that here on the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Even with a good song like this, and even enjoying the loss of Alabama on Saturday, don't celebrate too prematurely. Super Dave warned us earlier, if you're a Braves fan, don't celebrate too soon either. You may be one win away from the NLCS, but we were kind of here a year ago. Super Dave thinks there could be trouble in the future of the Atlanta Braves as they try to close out that series this afternoon with the Milwaukee Brewers, throwing Charlie Morton on short rest for the first time in 13 years in terms of starting on short rest. And you can catch that game on our sister station, First Pitch, at 5:15. Alabama lost on Saturday, and it's a joyous occasion. Alabama's one of those teams, you either love them or you hate them. If you're not an Alabama fan, you probably celebrated. You were happy to see that they lost on Saturday against Texas A&M. There's also kind of a smugness, right, to the whole program and those around them. So you enjoy it when they lose and when they have to suffer like you and your team does too frequently throughout the year. And many are excited about Alabama and the fact that, look, Cincinnati's not ranked ahead of them, and, you know, they fell in the rankings, and rightfully so. But don't think that a loss Saturday ends the season for Alabama. See, I like congruent arguments. Two things can be true at the same time. Alabama could have been exposed somewhat on Saturday. They could be shown to be vulnerable on Saturday, but they can still also, at the same time, with those things said, still go on to win the national championship? Would you really be that surprised? Would you really put it past Nick Saban if Alabama won the national championship this year? ESPN's FPI still gives the Crimson Tide the third best odds of reaching the playoff this season. Georgia has the best, 91% chance to make the playoff this year. Oklahoma is number two, 59%. Alabama is then third at 54%, right ahead of Cincinnati, Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, Michigan State, a lot of Big Ten teams next on that list. By the way, if you're a Clemson fan, ESPN's FPI still gives them a 4% chance of making the playoffs, which is 12th on the list. In terms of winning the conference, Alabama still has a 31% chance of winning the SEC. I expect them to still be in the SEC championship. We'll see if they can then get past Georgia. That will be the determining factor. They beat Georgia, win the SEC, they're still going to the playoff. If they can't beat Georgia, well then, yeah, they're not good enough to win the national championship anyways. And with two losses, you should leave them at home. But also, according to ESPN's FPI, when you look at the rest of their regular season, the toughest opponent they have left is Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Now, you know, it is, of course, a rivalry game. It's on the road this year for Alabama. And yet they still have, according to at least ESPN's FPI projections, an 80% chance of winning. 80. That's their toughest test. Mississippi State is next, then Tennessee and LSU and New Mexico State. I think they roll in all of those games. And they'll have a bye after the Tennessee game. So they play two more games, then they get a bye week. And when you give a good coach extra time to prepare, you know he's going to use it and that team will benefit. And then they come back from that bye week, they get LSU, New Mexico State, and then Arkansas at home. Arkansas ranked in the top 20. Do we really think Arkansas, though, especially after the game with Georgia, can compete with even the Crimson Tide? ESPN's FPI does not. They give them an 88% chance of beating Arkansas. And then again, an 80% chance of beating Auburn at the end of the year. And when it comes to rankings, FPI has Alabama as the second-best team right now in college football. Second-best special teams, second-best offense, ninth in defense. So top 10 across the board. It was enjoyable, I have to admit. As a neutral observer, you know, my favorite college football team is Connecticut. So essentially what I'm saying is I don't have a favorite college football team. So as somebody completely neutral that just watches the sport, loves college football, covers it, you know, roots for chaos, I'll admit I enjoyed it. I was listening to that game on the ride home. I was enjoying. We were listening to the Alabama broadcast. Eli Gold is a legend. But I do have to admit I enjoyed hearing the, you know, the consternation in his voice during that broadcast. When Alabama, that broadcast, they were, you know, very concerned, very stressed out with the way their team was playing. I enjoyed it, but don't think that that suddenly eliminates them. Just like I said earlier in the year at the time when Clemson and Georgia played, it just eliminates the wiggle room. But for Alabama, you look at the rest of that schedule, who's going to take them down? Mississippi State, Tennessee, LSU, New Mexico State, Arkansas, Auburn, maybe Auburn. They've pulled upsets before. Maybe. They're at home this year. Throw the records out the window in the rivalry game. Use that old cliche. Who knows? But I think Alabama still gets to the SEC title game. And I still trust in a big game like that. Still, after all I've seen this year and all the praise I've heaped on Georgia, I still trust Saban and Alabama in that spot more than I do Georgia. Now, here was the Get Up crew. Paul Feinbaum and Dan Orlowski talking about Alabama this morning. They were talking about this very thing. Did the loss Saturday, did this have the end? Because we can be so reactionary. We see them lose. We say, oh, that's it. Alabama's done. But if you take a step back and you see, I think you can simply understand that, yes, they did not look great on Saturday. Maybe not as good as we thought they were, but it doesn't mean their season's over. Here they were talking about it on Get Up this morning.
Alabama does not deserve to be in the top four right now. Now, the question is, are they one of the four best teams? And I think most of us would probably agree they are, but that's not really where we are. Where we are is that Alabama simply has to run the table. That normally is not a big deal for Alabama, but it may be a big deal for Alabama this year because they get through the regular season. They will see Georgia in the SEC championship game. And last week we said it didn't matter. One team could lose and they both be in the playoffs. Not this time around. If Alabama loses that game, they are done.
I agree. Like I think that Alabama has to win out to get in. Cincinnati is in. They are locked in. You're still thinking Ohio State has the chance to get in. Michigan has the chance to get in. Iowa's going to have to play in the Big Ten championship. Iowa still has to go to Nebraska as well. So I think Alabama's in legit, like, concern to make the playoff for the first time, not make the playoff for the first time in a long time because Georgia's fantastic. And you talked about them being vulnerable, almost losing to Florida. If you had watched Texas A&M play, the two games previous to playing Alabama this past weekend, you would say there is absolutely no shot that they can beat Alabama. And it just shows that there is the chance any given week that one of these teams can lose. And I don't care, Georgia can still lose. They got to play Florida in a couple weeks as well. So Alabama has to run the table because there's teams behind that are just going to have as many opportunities to have a better schedule as well outside of Alabama.
Feinbaum and Dan Orlovsky on Get Up this morning. Yeah, I think everything they said there is accurate. Alabama, you win out the rest of the way, you're in. And the only game I think they could lose, maybe the Iron Bowl, but realistically, probably the SEC title game against Georgia. And ESPN's FPI is not the be-all, end-all. I just think it's a good source, a good reference point. And they have Georgia and Alabama as the two best teams still in college football. So if you give me the two best teams in college football at a neutral site, of course, right? That's anyone's game, especially when you factor in Nick Saban against Kirby Smart, neutral site, everything on the line for Alabama. More pressure on Alabama. Or, you know, they need that game more. Georgia could probably lose at that point, still make the playoff. I still like my chances with Alabama. So it was enjoyable for them to lose on Saturday, but don't think it really changes a whole lot for Alabama this year. It just removes their wiggle room. Now they have to win out. And now they can't avoid another slip-up like that, a slip-up that they really haven't had in years, losing to an unranked team on the road favored by over 10 points. And as they said, the playoff teams, right, Orlovsky said Georgia, Cincinnati, your Big Ten team, and then maybe Alabama if they win out, seems pretty accurate. Georgia should be in. If they don't lose before the SEC title game, they should already be locked in. Then you take your Big Ten champion, you would imagine, whoever it may be, Iowa, maybe Ohio State, maybe a Michigan State, whoever it is. And then I would like to think Cincinnati, Oklahoma may have something to say about that. And then that fourth spot would either be probably the second team in the Big Ten worth taking or the second team in the SEC, like potentially in Alabama. Or if Iowa loses in the Big Ten championship, do you still take a one-loss team at that point? There's still so much to be played out here. But Alabama is very much still in the thick of it. So enjoy that loss for Saturday, but also understand at the same time, it wasn't some sort of season ender either. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Billy is with us. Billy, what's going on? How are you?
Good, how are you? Good. It kind of answered my question, but I still got a question with that. With Georgia, Alabama.
Yeah.
Say Georgia does go unbeaten and they're in a championship, and Alabama does run the table, and they get in and they play against Georgia. If Alabama beats Georgia, would they end up putting Georgia and Alabama back in the playoff, or do you think they would do that this year?
I would think so. I think if the two teams went out the rest of the way, and you have an undefeated Georgia against a one-loss Alabama, and then Alabama wins. Yeah, I think he'd probably take both those teams out of the SEC into the playoff.
Okay, and then what would they do? You think they would match them up again, or would they match them up against two other opponents and do it that way?
Yeah, that's a good question. You'd probably put – I mean, it depends what else is going on with the other teams, but if Georgia, say, is the number one team and then they lose that game, you could put them, then just drop them to number two, put Alabama at – I guess they'd have to be four. Yeah, try to avoid a repeat in the first round, I guess, and set up for – those two to potentially meet in the national championship because they are still the two best teams in college football. So I guess that would be the hope if we get to that situation, if that plays out. You probably want to avoid them in the first round and hope that they meet in the championship after just playing in the SEC title game. So I appreciate it, Bill. I mean, there's still so much. We love to focus on the playoff. It's what a lot of people hate about the playoff is that once they introduced the playoff system in college football, that's all we care about. And so here we are on October 12th talking about the playoff when there's still half of the season to go. And I get that. But that's just the way it works now in college football. It is all about the playoff. And when you look at that playoff, it'll be very fascinating to see how things play out the next couple of weeks. But I think if you get Georgia, Alabama with no more losses the rest of the way to meet in the SEC title game, I think they're, as long as Alabama wins, they can't lose that game. If Alabama wins, I think you put both in, and then you at that point understand they're still the two best teams in college football, and you try to get a national championship of those two and have them play other teams in the first round. If you get that thought process. 843-721-9500. Back to the phones. Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I was thinking about Urban Meyer, and I was thinking about John Gruden. Now, both of those are coaching grown men in pros. Don't you think if a grown man, your boss, did something nefarious, how does that affect you? You still go to work and do your own job, right? I go to work and do my own job. So why, you know, he's the leader of the job, so why does what he wrote in an email 11 years ago affect you?
Yeah,
that's what I'm curious.
I agree with, you know, it's different. The players know Gruden better or best, and if they have no complaints, if they had no bad interactions with him, to me, that's probably worth more for that job. What Gruden did was wrong. What he said was inappropriate, but if the players who are around him every day say that he's never crossed any line, he's always been great with them, you know, I mean, that's what's going on currently. I take that probably more than I do something said in a personal email 10 years ago. But, you know, that's just that's the way things.
Well, I'm saying if you do, if you're good at your job and you wrote something on Facebook or you wrote something on Twitter and you weren't working for your company, but they hired you knowing, you know, but they hired you and they didn't know you wrote those things, they can go back 11 years and get rid of you?
Yeah, that's why I said I think it's a complicated, it's a more complicated than people may think. Now, again, what Gruden said, it still makes it wrong, right? He said it 11 years ago, even if he had, just say he's a different person now. Still, it was wrong what he said in those emails, and I think he should be punished, but there is that slippery slope of how far back do you go, different company, 11 years ago, personal emails, and then to the extreme of losing his job. I thought he should have been punished. I thought it'd be more of a suspension, a fine, maybe go through some sort of counseling type of deal. I honestly never thought that he would actually lose his job. I was surprised by that news yesterday. He resigned, but you know he was forced. You know his hand was forced. Gruden, the football guy he is, would never willingly step away. But, yeah, it's a complicated issue. And if the guys in the locker room, you know, mostly African-American and the one openly gay player in the league is in that locker room, if they're fine, you know, they say, hey, we've never had a bad dealing with him the last 3 years, you know, I think that may be more valuable than some personal emails from 11 years ago because that's more recent. That's the everyday thing. That's working with those guys directly. Just because of the things he said in the email, that doesn't mean he's racist or he is, in fact, a homophobe or anything else that you want to attach. He said some terrible things that he shouldn't have said, you know, but people use certain words without carrying that the definition of the meaning of that word. If you get what I'm trying, I can't say certain words, otherwise I'll be in trouble. But if you get what there's certain words that people would use in their vernacular that don't carry the same meaning as what they originally meant. If you get what I'm trying to say, doesn't mean that he's a certain type of a person for using certain words. Shouldn't have used those words. But it is a complex situation to go back 11 years ago when, you know, maybe the guys in the locker room would stand up for him today and say, no, the 3 years he's been here, it's been perfectly fine. I don't know. It's complex. All I know is that if you go through the emails of anyone else in the NFL over the last 11 years, they'd probably have to resign today as well. That's the slippery slope. We'll wrap up your Tuesday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
What a funky finish your Tuesday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. And don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com through the TuneIn Radio app, your smart speaker, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com by clicking on our show page, or actually, I should say, just clicking on the home page. And download our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And you can listen to the show from anywhere in the world through the app. The show also available on demand in the app as well. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 11 different states and 3 different countries, I believe, on this Tuesday afternoon. Appreciate you. Spent more time on Gruden than I was planning. Now, it is probably the biggest story in sports today, but I just think there's a lot more to it, and something that certainly is covered everywhere else, so... You know, a lot of times I look at this as kind of a break from whatever else is going on. But with that said, Ricardo had called last segment and brought up a good point. Now, I think Urban Meyer and John Gruden is apples to oranges, but I think the point made is that specifically more so applies to Urban Meyer. And Urban probably loves this the fact that somebody else is taking the heat right now, another coach in the NFL. For the Urban situation, I think that applies to the point that was brought up. Where, you know, like, what difference does it make to you? If I saw something online of my boss in a similar situation, would it affect me on a day-to-day basis? No, I'd still come in here and do the same job. Would I think of that person, like, differently? Probably. Would they lose some of my respect even as a boss? Yeah, maybe. And that would be the concern, is if you lose, you know, once the boss, of course, You could always reference everything back to Seinfeld, but there's a Seinfeld episode where Elaine is a bad dancer, the little kicks, and then she loses. She's the boss at her company, and they all start mocking her because she's a terrible dancer, and she loses the respect of her employees, and then, you know, the operation, it's not running smoothly anymore. So once you lose the locker room as a football coach, once you lose the respect of your employees, I mean, you still have the power over them, but once you lose that respect, it can make things a little more difficult. Maybe, you know, as an employee, you don't take them as serious. You don't want to listen to them as much because of that embarrassing moment they had. But for a football coach, once you lose the locker room, that's where you're in trouble. So for like Urban Meyer, the players still need to come in and perform because they have to get a contract. They just may look at Urban differently. I mean, there was a video last week of them, you know, breaking the huddle, 1-2 grind, I think it was, which, you know, in the video, that woman was grinding on him. I think maybe it was just a coincidence. I think that was mocking Urban. You'll get things like that. For John Gruden, it's a little bit different because the things he did say, I mean, if that's how he is as a person, then that affects you trying to play for a coach who acts that way. The thing is, I have no idea what he's like as a head coach on a day-to-day basis. All I know is that some of his players have come to his defense. At least from what I've seen, nobody has piled on. I haven't seen anybody from the Las Vegas Raiders that said, oh, yeah, he talks like that all the time. Oh, he used to call me these terrible things. I haven't seen that. But as I continue to say, slippery slope. When you want to go, when you want to judge him on strictly personal emails from a private conversation 11 years ago. What he said, was it right? No, of course not. But let's all be real here. We could all probably find something in all of our own personal life, text message, emails, whatever, that we've said over the past 11 years that would tick off somebody, that would get you in trouble with somebody. Anyways, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.